Well, welcome. Welcome to this special Wednesday edition of the Pirate Monk Podcast. We ordinarily record on Mondays, but I don't know, it's summertime.
Right.
And it was just too much to do on Monday, so
That's
we rescheduled to Tuesday, and that didn't work out, so it's Wednesday.
And nothing more thrilling than Wednesday. I mean, when I think party down, I think Wednesday. I think we all do.
Well, I'm Nate Larkin, your host of the Pirate Monk Podcast. Dave Mullen is on vacation with his family in Florida, but I'm here with everybody's favorite guest, Brad Stein.
Yes. I'm everybody, even David Mullen's favorite guest. He listens in on these days when he's not there to see how good he could have been.
And, of course, we're accompanied, this time on microphone, by our fearless engineer, Mondo.
Oh, yes. Finally get a microphone now.
He's a good.
After 26 episodes.
I know it. Yeah. An engineer that for 26 times thought, I'm missing a microphone.
Exactly.
Took him 6 months to realize maybe I should bring one since I'm the engineer.
Right.
Well, I'm glad to see that you've dressed up for your debut on the microphone.
In
those
the plaid-ish.
Fantastic plaid shorts.
Yeah. I'm branching out. I'm branching out a little bit.
He is. Yeah. I just wish he would have put a shirt on. I'm telling you. I mean, I know this is man stuff, but Lord have mercy. Come on.
Yeah, stretching a little bit. I normally don't do it, but I'm trying.
All right. You're just being real and open and raw. Yep. That's what Samson's all about.
Yeah, not that open.
No, exactly.
Well, we've got a good show today. We've got some... we have banter.
Yes.
we got some listener mail.
All right.
And we got a great we're getting the band back together, Brad.
You're on a mission from God.
I am.
Hey.
A cohort from the days of Godmen.
Amen. Yep.
We're going to speak by telephone. Communicate via the wonders of Skype with none other than the Bunk.
Yes.
David Bunker.
Dave Bunker, who's smarter than both of us combined.
That's true. It's scary how smart that guy is.
Very smart, genius guy. But I can run faster than him. I can tell you that right now. So I can make fun of him and he can't catch me.
We'll get started when we return on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Oh, a pirate's life is a wonderful life, a roving over the sea. Give me a career as a buccaneer, it's the life of a pirate for me. Oh, the life of a pirate for me.
And we're back with mail from listeners. Thanks to all of you who wrote and messaged after last week's special episode, that the interview with my lovely bride.
Allie.
Yeah, she did the deal. She made her appearance on the podcast. Mm. Yeah, here's a representative letter from Bert. Bert says, my sincere thanks to Allie for her story. I'm sure you'll get a ton of mail that sounds just like this, and I hate to sound common, but I wanted to personally say thanks. I'm 18 months into my journey from porn and lust toward real love and community. In some ways, it seems like I've been on this road forever. And other times, it seems like a blink. The forever feelings usually come when my wife and I are struggling with what she likes to facetiously call my little problem. My little problem has seriously rocked her world. And contrary to what I originally hoped, she won't likely recover anytime soon. Like probably hundreds of other guys, I've been longing to know how your wife has walked this road and, most importantly, where she is now. In fact, during a particularly dark day many months ago, I was so desperate for hope that I hunted down your email address and wrote you asking how your wife had weathered your personal storm. It was that contact and your kind response that opened the door for me to find out about Samson, your book, and what actually, I believe, may be my life's work from this point forward. Hearing Allie's story and Allie's words was like a kind touch during a dark day. It doesn't fix my marriage or my problems, but it reassures me that I am yet at the beginning of my journey and that my wife is still at the beginning of hers. Thank you both for walking the way you have, very humanly it seems, through your valley, so that those who follow behind will know that it's possible to come out on the other side. What a nice letter. Yeah, thanks. Very nice. Thanks very much, Bert, for that kind letter. All right, here's another letter from a female listener. Dear Samson Society team, That would be us.
Mm. Team.
Yeah, team.
Thank you.
We don't have a We don't have a uniform.
No.
But if we get one.
We can plaid shorts.
It will not involve plaid shorts.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. Thought I had a good idea.
Dear Samson Society team, mm-hmm. I think.
And we are dear, I think.
Yes.
Yes, we are.
Wouldn't uniforms require eye patches?
I would think. Well, in this specific case, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that would be true.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But and a parrot. But, you know, mascot would be perfect.
There you go.
Parrot mascot.
All right, this is a serious letter.
Oh, okay.
I am a new podcast listener. My life was altered a short time ago by finding out about my fiancé's sexual addictions, porn, masturbation, fornication, adultery, addictions that started more than 20 years ago. He's a Christian who has suffered the shame of his double life, and he has continued with porn and masturbation for several years. Without knowing the reasons why, I have watched his zeal for the Lord wane during the time I've known him. Now I understand better why he's not been able to make progress. His pornography use increased alongside an inappropriate online relationship he had with someone else during a brief time when we were separated. After we reconciled, he lied to me about having been with anyone else. This other woman pursued him, wanting a face-to-face relationship, and eventually he was also unfaithful to me by having sexual intercourse with her once after we'd reconciled. He then cut those ties and showed repentance. I believe this was an escalation in his acting out that got interrupted in God's mercy. I expect that if he is able to love, his love for me will somehow be tainted by the lust in his heart. But making allowances for this, is it even truly possible for him to love me on any significant level, even now? He insists he does. He says he will seek help and accountability. He's made some small strides in that direction. This is difficult for him, however, because he does not have friends and does not have a church home at present. I have many questions, but at times the main question is about his ability to love me. He insists that he loves me. We've been waiting until marriage to have sex, and we try to avoid any other compromising intimate relationships. Our relations. Our track record is not perfect, but I now realize that's mainly because of his lust and lack of self-control. If I had not found out about this part of his life, I would have felt loved and cared for by him because he treats me well and we have fun together. But is his ability to love me even possible when he's been consuming pornography on a weekly basis, and I suppose at times more frequently? I've read stories of men who went on to fight for their souls, their wives, and children against this sinful addiction. I wonder if these men did it because they truly loved their wives, or because they didn't want to lose the safety of the marriage relationship. Am I kidding myself by waiting around here? Is a lust-ensnared heart also capable of loving and caring for someone else? Well, that's a sobering letter and a sobering question. And since you ask, here's my take on it. I think you need to trust your gut on this one. Your instincts are good. There are some things that I hear in your letter that trouble me. First of all, it's good to know that he treats you well and that you have fun together. That's really not uncommon. Most lust addicts are not bad guys. They're not monsters. They're just sick. But it's a sickness that directly impedes their ability to love another person. Lust addiction really springs from an intimacy disorder. A guy who does not know how to connect with real people or who is afraid to can opt for fantasy connections or even when it escalates into connections with strangers where he's not going to make an emotional connection. It's a fantasy thing. Even if it's only pornography, His daily use, his brain is still being conditioned by that sexual release and by everything that precedes it. In connecting with a fantasy, he's actually dulling his ability to connect with the real person. That's the thing. Lust kills love. Active lust addicts are love cripples. Now, I didn't know I was a love cripple when I first, entered the world of sex addiction recovery 12 years ago. And I was a nice guy. I'd never hit my wife. I'd hardly ever said a cruel word to her. However, I was emotionally distant. I was cruel in passive ways. Mostly, I was gone. I was even gone from my own life. Sexual acting out is really a disassociative activity. But to use New Testament language, when you walk by the flesh rather than by the spirit, you can do one. You can either walk after the flesh or walk after the spirit. And when you're pursuing lust, you have to abandon your true life. You have to abandon your spiritual life. And so I was absent from my own life for years and years and years. And, my poor bride, God bless her, had to put up with that kind of poverty and neglect. And she blamed herself for that. And I allowed her to do it. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. And I don't wish that on your fiancé. Active lust addicts. I tell you, a lust addict in recovery makes a great partner. In recovery, a person learns how to live again, learns how to love. The foundation of recovery is radical honesty. And it doesn't sound to me as though he's been very honest with you. It sounds to me like you've caught him more than he has confessed anything to you. It sounds as though he's minimizing his behavior. It may be true that there was only one woman and it was only one time. It may be true that it's only weekly, but I suspect that his activity is probably to this day more frequent than he wants to admit even to himself, let alone you. Lust addiction is a progressive disease, and if he's been active in it for 20 years, I can be quite certain that the behavior has escalated. As it escalates, it impoverishes a person. His life is now very small. It's not surprising that he has no friends and that he is not in church. As we opt more and more for the fantasy of pornography, we cut ourselves off from relationships with other people. It is an isolating disease that thrives on isolation. And there's no one person in the world who can fix him. Hollywood will tell you, and even large portions of the Christian community will tell you, that all he needs to save him is the perfect mate. That somehow if he's got the right woman who does the right things, she can save him. You're not going to find that message in the Bible. The Bible makes it clear that we need community. We're all part of a body which has many members. And there are things he needs that you can't give him. He needs brothers, first of all. He needs people he can walk with in absolute honesty and transparency toward the light and toward a life that at this point he doesn't have. I wouldn't marry him on the strength of a promise that he's going to seek accountability. He needs more than accountability. He needs brothers. The great gift that you might be able to give him is you might be able to give him the gift of desperation. He wants to marry you. I think you'd be crazy to marry him unless he has entered recovery and has made real progress in the right direction. And I think lingering in a relationship where marriage is a live option is cruel to you and to him. It could well be that you hold the key. You may be able to help impel him toward getting help. He needs a life. He needs something better than he has. He wouldn't make a good husband at this point. I'm sure he's a nice guy. But I don't know you. But I feel compassion for you and for him. And I know that marriage won't solve it. So my advice, I mean, just from one screwed up guy, my advice is follow your gut, follow your heart on this. Love him well by not marrying him in his present condition. We'll be back on the Pirate Monk Podcast. When you feel your life's too hard, just go have a talk with God. Many of us feel we walk along without a friend. Communicating with one who lives within, forgetting all about the one who never ever let you down. And you can talk to him anytime, he's always around. When you feel your life's too hard, just go have a talk with God. And we're back. Well, Brad, I went ahead and answered the letter. I didn't even ask for your thoughts.
As well you should. You are the lead pirate. You are Captain Hook Pirate Monks.
No captains on this ship.
And it was good. But, you know, it was funny as I was listening to you. I fell asleep once, but when I woke up got the last 2 seconds, I was thinking to myself, it was actually excellent insight and everything. But and as a fellow sojourner on this journey, a fellow broken vessel, you know, a couple things occurred to me. One is, you know, and something that I've said in my show and have used numerous times is, you know, you can tell what somebody believes not by what they say they believe, but does it affect their behavior?
Yeah.
You know, if I say, for example, I wish I could play the piano. It's like, no, you don't.
Yeah.
Because if you want to play piano, you go out and take piano lessons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right.
So it's easy to say, I want to stop addiction. But if you're not getting help, you really don't want to stop.
Right, yeah.
So I think the first thing we have to discern is not if the person's fixed or if they don't have a long road to recovery. If you're in something in 20 years, you're not going to fix it in 20 minutes.
Right, yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean it would take 20 years to fix.
No.
Right. But it's certainly going to be a journey of relearning habits.
Right.
That's all addictions.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, certainly to see him on that road to recover, whether it be in, you know, therapy or whether it be with a Samson scenario, something that finally let him say, I'm serious about wanting to be different, that's certainly a sign because we're all in need of that. And certainly a true love and companionship would support if you see your spouse or fiancé struggling. And they're trying to get help.
Yeah.
Well, that's where they need your support because they're trying.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. But I agree with you. You know, I think that there needs to be some consistency in that so you can feel comfortable because I don't think if there's one mistake women constantly make is, you know, and it's age old, I'll marry him and I'll fix him. Well, you're dead.
Yeah.
If they're not already on the road, promise once you get married, you're going to be in for some heartache because you're going to be in that anyways.
Yeah.
The other thing I was thinking, though, was, and you can, you know, you're more an expert on this than me, because Lord knows nobody has lust down like you do. But tell me about this. I mean, you are a very, you know, smart guy, and I respect you a lot, Nate. And you know, I don't think there any man who struggles with pornography and addiction, I don't think there's anybody that's ever been in that place likes himself.
Oh, no, I agree. Oh,
yeah. So if there's one thing that women can be godsends, literally, it's helping a man love himself.
Yeah.
Because we're broken, and because our nature isn't communal women's are, we have to learn that.
Yeah.
We have to learn that safe place.
Yeah.
We have to learn how to seek out relationship with another man. We have to learn how to trust that the woman we're with actually has our best interests in mind, because we are so, we personalize things so much.
Yeah.
Because if you were to ask a man what he, what, you know, and a man and woman at a marriage retreat, what is it that you most need from a man or from a woman? You know, the number one answer for women, usually is, you know, honored, you know, to be loved, you know, whatever. Yeah. But for a man, it's respect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if a woman gives him that respect, then it helps energize his masculinity and lets him get in touch with who he is. So it occurred to me from this listener that his behavior is his choice.
Yeah.
You can't fix that, nor are you obligated to that. He has to make that call if he's seeking God. But on the other hand, you can assist him in helping him know that he's loved, that he's valuable, that, and more importantly, and this is something he's going to have to get at, is he has to begin to see himself the way God sees him, because he's never going to see himself in a place that is going to be sufficient enough, because we're messed up people. He has to know what the Father thinks of him, and so forth, to begin to let him realize that, you know, in the fantasies, in the pornography, you create a woman that loves you exactly how you are, that accepts you exactly how you are, and it's all on your terms. It's immature.
Yeah.
It's broken. It's narcissistic.
Yeah.
It's all about you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, all that's true.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, it's coming from a broken place of somebody that doesn't know what it is to have a relationship with a woman.
Yeah.
And once he has that, he'll find what he thinks he's trying to get through pornography.
Yeah.
So obviously, if she's able to be there for him and assist him as he makes commitments to progress and proves them, then she could be a godsend.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good clarifying point. I think that our listener can be a great help to her friend by downgrading him from fiancé to friend.
Right, that's good.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Without ditching the friendship.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
She can still communicate respect to him.
Right.
But let's face it, there are very few of us who will change.
Right.
Until we reach the point that it's less painful to change than to stay the way we are.
Well,
and sometimes the most loving thing to do is to administer a little bit of pain.
Well, and that's the power of friendship and companionship and relationship, because if you care about the person, then they can help drive you in a positive way by not allowing you your junk.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that what Silas does with Samson? I mean, isn't that really what that whole principle is? Is I'll love you, I'll walk with you, but dang it, I'll call you on your junk too, so that you have that iron sharpens iron scenario.
Well, that's absolutely true. Yeah, let's talk for a minute about the Silas relationship. I get questions about the Silas relationship all the time. This is the heart of Samson life. A guy really isn't in the Samson society, in my view, until he has a Silas.
Mm-hmm.
Until then, he's attending meetings. He's an interested party. Mm. He's a part of the conversation, but he's not really a part of the society. And I know that, and that's the toughest thing. It took me, you know, I began this road in 12-step recovery, and it took me 3.5 years to get any decent sobriety, because it took me that long to actually surrender to the idea of needing another person in my life that I was going to tell the truth to on a daily basis. I don't know, Mondo, I'm at that age where I can't remember. I live in constant fear that I am repeating myself.
Right.
And I'll continue doing
it. Well, you just said that.
I'm
sorry. Just a joke.
Have I talked about the making the daily phone call, about the four things? Yeah.
So the Silas relationship is something we talk about quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, Brad had a good point about men being communal beings.
Yeah.
And because we are that way, and it's such a community type of relationship with a Silas, it's why it's so difficult, I think, for men to actually connect with the idea. Now, they connect with the meeting off the bat faster than they do the Silas
concept. Yeah, yeah, right.
But I think that's why we get so many questions about Silas, is because of that communal aspect of men. We can't, you know.
It's not natural for
us. It's not natural,
And we have to learn it. And, well, the thing that I think happens is that men consider needing another man to be weak.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
to be cowardice, and instead of realizing, no, you're actually creating teammates that right. allow you to win.
Yeah.
Because obviously nobody goes into battle.
Right.
Even special ops, which are small yeah. groups, are still groups.
Yeah.
You cannot survive alone, and I think that's what Silas has proven. And
well, I think that the Silas conversations, we'll have that quite a bit. I think this will be a continuing thing. But it's necessary.
Yeah.
You know, new listeners, old listeners, I think it's just to keep, you know, the reminder going of how important it is.
Yeah.
The value of
it.
And that's really the essence of Samson.
Right.
Like I said, it's not necessarily about the meeting. It's about that silence, and it's about the meetings after the meetings, obtaining that silence. You know, it's really about that. So this probably will be a continual conversation.
Well, and also, I think in some weird way, becomes a surrogate for the most crucial relationship in a man's life
mm-hmm.
that he oftentimes doesn't have, and that's his dad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's that masculine mentor, and if you're the same age or whatnot, then maybe it's just equal footing. You know what I'm saying?
You know who we have to get in on this conversation?
I don't
Bunker.
Have the slight. Yeah.
We got
Bunker.
To.
Oh, yeah.
Because Bunker has said, Bunker has said that in Samson we are essentially refathering each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I want to go.
Well,
let's call Bunker. And we got Dave Bunker on the line from Chicago. David, one of the original pirate monks. You were at that very first meeting, David. As I remember, you made that meeting. You showed us what transparency was about.
Well, that's your memory, and I respect it.
And I sure love you, Dave, and I sure admire the way I have seen you walk with so many guys into healing. I want to ask you a question. Brad Stein's with me.
What's going on, little David Bunker?
Hey, Mr. Stein.
What's happening, brother?
Well, I'm up in Chicago celebrating the Blackhawks victory, but that's another podcast.
Yes. Well, God bless you. So, like in hockey, I think it's you and four other people in the U.S., but good job.
We were just talking about the Silas relationship, Dave, and Brad made the point that in his opinion, that relationship between a guy and his Silas can sometimes serve as a surrogate for what Brad called the deepest relationship in a man's life, the relationship with his dad. What's your take on that?
I would agree that fathering is not a biological issue, that fathering is like a life-giving issue, and it's kind of like when you move from the statement of, like, what do I get to what can I offer? And when you move from that, what can I get, to what can I offer, you step into like a fathering role.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that one of the reasons why men are so confused is because a lot of the fathering has been co-opted by, the industrial lives that we live in the business world, that the absentee father at times is absent because he's working and he's gone, and so therefore the gifts that he has to offer his son or his daughter or whatever, it just through a lack of proximity, they don't get delivered. So I would say that the fathering spirit is more about the gift acknowledgement and the gift offering energy.
Hmm. Wow.
Well, you know, Dave, I mean, seeing that we live in a culture that is different than others. For example, you know, in tribal cultures where there is a men's hut, there's a place where there is going to be some kind of, you know, even in the Jewish culture where they have bar mitzvah, and again, some tribal cultures where you're going to be moving into manhood from the mother's hut to the men's hut, returning to mom, this time with a shield and a sword to defend her, no longer as somebody that she's going to, be the hen to. But is it, you know, outside of formulaic, you know, concepts of laying the mantle of father onto the son so he knows he's moving into that relationship, is there a way to really regain what, if you didn't get what you needed from your dad, Is there a way to get that fully restored to you that's equally valid and valuable if you didn't get it from your biological dad?
I think that there is a way, and I think it's the kingdom, and I think that because it's the kingdom, it's a formidable task because it involves our allegiance to a different set of values. And I'll give you an example. Moving up here to Chicago, it's been a challenge from Nashville because I had a lot of male relationships, which meant there are a lot of men that could speak into my life on a lot of different areas. You know, I'm not all that good at fixing cars, so I got friends who understand that. I'm not all that good at times at handling my finances, so I've got guys that can speak into my life on that. And I think that in theory, the church is to be an extended family, if you will, that creates a life that those the gifts are offered in a broad sense, but because of our schedules, because of the way suburban life is formed, it's difficult to get enough relationships of substance. And I'm not suggesting you have 10 or 20, but you can have 3 or 4 or 5 substantive relationships with men where that masculine exchange, which men have, you know, where like they're willing to submit to one another when they see that this person is given their strength as a gift, not as authority. They're just saying, here, can I help you? And they're like, yeah, man, I need help. I would say that ostensibly the church says that it wants to do that, but it's struggling because, quite frankly, we're all so busy and we go to our schedules and all the things that we're committed to. Because I think a lot of this comes from proximity, spontaneity, and intentionality. And without some of that, you know, because of proximity, if you know, if there aren't guys in your life that you can, you know, like just bump into every once in a while, then the full nature of those gifts of those men don't get deposited. And I think that's why a lot of people feel isolated and they feel estranged. But the answer to your question is, yeah, I think it can be restored because I think that the idea that the father has to be the, you know, that if the father doesn't do it, you're screwed. That's more of a therapeutic view than a biblical view. Not that the father is important. In fact, when he's absentee, it does leave a major void. And the major void, of course, is because if something's absent, you don't even really know what to name what wasn't there.
Right. Well, and we talked earlier being addicted to pornography and so forth. One of the things that we brought up was, nobody that's really addicted to porn men like themselves. There's something broken that they're trying to discover through this false relationship to make them feel valuable. And what I wonder is, and maybe you can't be answered in one word or one sentence, but would you think that perhaps the culmination of what a father gives to his son is just validation that he's valuable, that he's somebody that is worth going out and fighting the good fight? I mean, is there one sort of organic essence that a father gives to his son he can't get anywhere else?
Well, let me answer that in a paradoxical way. My answer would be yes, no. Meaning, I think when a father is not there to the degree that he should be, that becomes the sacred wound. And that wound is real and that wound is deep. But that's the human part of our journey through this fallen world, and we're fallen beings and our parents fail us and we fail them and the world fails us. But when I said yes, meaning yeah, if the father relationship is bad, man, you're screwed. But here's the part. You're not screwed when you realize that very lack, that very wound is the source that's going to draw you and force you to find redemption in other places and in other ways. And I don't think that you can ultimately ever replace it in the sense that, okay, if you don't get it here, you can get it here. What happens is that your healing allows you then to understand forgiveness, and it allows you to understand suffering and And so, am I making sense here? In other words,
yeah.
Like the brokenness actually becomes a gift as well, because that's what redemption is.
Mm. Oh, that's good stuff, Dad.
Yeah. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, you know, it's one of the interesting things that's been happening in my life lately, going through some difficulties, is my prayer has kind of become, God, let me learn how to get through this so that I can heal others with it. In other words, I think that sometimes the junk that comes upon us, our dark places, is an honor. God is honoring us with this moment of darkness, this valley. He says, because son, when you get through here, I want you to go heal thousands. I'm going to sacrifice your pain for a while for you alone to go then and pass this off to my kids. So this is, I'm honoring you with this warrior mantle, but it's going to suck to get through because it hurts.
Yeah.
So maybe that's, you know, kind of what David, you're saying is the father, you know, even in neglect is giving you a gift. And maybe you can even go back sometimes and reconcile with your dad and help him because he's broken. He probably didn't get something from his dad and he didn't know how to give you something he didn't have.
Yeah, I would say this is, I've kind of moved into, you know, there's the way of light and upward ascent, and then there's the way of darkness and descent. And neither of those preclude the Holy Spirit walking with you. And I think American evangelicalism kind of wants everything to be technique and like, hey, you're on a mountaintop, and if you're really doing things right, you should just have the self-esteem. It's just smoking 24/7. You and your wife should just be getting it on, and your children are just unbelievable. Your job is fulfilling. It's just like, well, that would be great if we didn't live in a fallen world with fallen systems and fallen people.
Right.
But that's just not reality. It's like, okay, what's plan B? Well, actually, that wasn't even plan A. I think that's just screwy. It's not the way it works. And so all of a sudden I begin to realize that the emptiness and the longing that I feel is actually the presence of God wanting to burst into my space. And so I've got to invert what my perceptions are about how I name my emptiness and my brokenness. And if it's a shame issue, it's like if my emptiness is a reflection of my worth and it's a reflection of my inabilities, then yeah, I'm going to avoid it and I'm going to run from it because it's always a statement about my inadequacy. And ironically, men know when they're inadequate. They just need a safe place to admit it.
Right, right. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
It safe means that other guys are going, yeah, I get you, dude. I feel the same way, or I'm the same. And I've seen that happen with God, man, with Samson, where guys can come and say, you know what, dude, I feel the same way.
Right. Well, that's one of the things I said has always been that my, you know, thing that's most bothered me about men's events is, it's like, you know, let me teach you where you suck at being a dad, then we'll learn about how you suck about being a father, and then how you suck about being a husband, and here's where you suck about being a leader, and here's where you're just terrible, and, you know, and so you can get all these fixtures. And I said, you know we suck at those things, or we wouldn't be at this meeting. You know, show me where I'm good at something. Lift me up. Show me the greatness. Show me the inherent value in the fact that I have testosterone, that I was made gender different than a woman, and it's equally valid and in some ways superior because we need to come together to become whole and full. But I don't see enough lifting up men and like they do, you know, with women sometimes. So I think I totally get what you're saying, Dave.
Hey, Bunk, I know you've got a meeting to get to. I want to be able to call you back on another episode of the podcast. I feel like we just got started on a conversation. Will you come back on another time?
I will come back. Let me end with this before I go. One of the things I've always loved about Brad is that this issue of laughter, you know, it's like laughter is not, you cannot laugh outside your body. You can only laugh inside your body. And if there's one thing evangelical struggles with, it's the humanization of spirituality, meaning humans do this. We're not angels.
Yeah.
We're humans. And laughing, and when I can laugh, this is what I learned in Nashville with my Samson buddies and friends and stuff, is that when somebody can say, Bunker, you suck at that, and I can laugh my guts out going, you know what, you are right, dude.
Yeah.
I am terrible at that.
Right.
And ironically, that laughter about what I'm not good at allows me then to, in humility, accept what I'm good at. But that doesn't give me arrogance. That gives me dignity.
You're right. And men are great at you know, if you're close, putting each other down because it's a privilege. I honor you and give you the right to joke with me about my failures because I know it's an endearment because it's guy to guy. It's the way we embrace.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. So I think you're right. Once again, you have figured out all the answers we needed, David.
I appreciate that. If I could only apply them to my own life, my wife would be a happy camper. So don't call her. Thanks, guys.
Amen, my brother.
Thank you, man.
Go Blackhawks.
See ya. Bye-bye.
So long, Dave.
Oft in danger, oft in woe. Onward, Christians, onward go. Fight the fight into the night, strengthened by the bread of life, strengthened by the bread of life. Onward, Christians, onward go. Join the war and face the foe. Do not faint, much yet remains. Dreary is that long campaign. Dreary is that long campaign. Shrink not, Christians, will you yield? Will you quit the painful fear? Will you flee in danger's hour? Know ye not your captain's power? Know ye not your captain's power? Let your drooping hearts be glad. March in heavenly armor clad. Fight, don't think the battle long. Victory soon shall be your song. Victory soon shall be your song. Let not sorrow dim your eyes. Soon shall every tear be dry. Let not woe your course and peace. Great your strength when great your need. Great your strength, great your need. Onward into battle move. More than conqueror shall you prove. Though opposed by many foes, Christian soldiers, onward go. Christian soldiers, onward go. Onward, Christians, onward go.
Well, that was Onward, Christian by Mo Leverett. The song we announced a couple months ago and then played a different one. Mo's going to be our guest on the podcast in just 2 weeks. I'm really looking forward to that. Meanwhile, I think we're about wrapped up this morning. It's been a nice morning. What have we learned?
Wow. I have like 5 chunks of meat I have to chew on before I can even begin to process what I learned. But love talking to Dave Bunker, smart guy, really insightful. Love talking to you. I think it was... You know, I think it probably always boils down to, no matter what the topic, no matter where it goes, it's about the relationship. That in our relationship with, you know, especially in this case, since it is men-driven podcast, it's about that relationship, which is surrogate to our Father, which ultimately is surrogate to our Heavenly Father, because the truth is, we don't get to hold Him yet. He doesn't get to put His arm around us yet. So we use men to do that, you know, in real time.
And You can't love God without loving your brother. I think I read that somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
That's how this whole thing happens. And you can't love your brother if you don't have one.
Mm. You got to get one.
You got
to love one.
To get one.
Right.
To love one. And that's the thought we leave you on for this episode of the Pirate Monk Podcast. We'll look for you next week.
He is full of mercy, and he is ever kind. Hear his invitation, his arms are open.